Welcome to What's for Dinner, a radio show about food, cooking, and eating, and sharing favorite recipes from Petersburg, Alaska, and around the world. Brought to you by KFSK Community Supported Radio in Petersburg, Alaska. I'm your host, Mindy Anderson. Coming up today on What's for Dinner, Sunday dinner, spring rhubarb recipes, the drink of the week, and my sweet tooth. That's all coming up today on What's for Dinner. Support for What's for Dinner comes from Hammer and Wecon Grocery Store, offering an expanded organic produce selection, cheeses, meats, Italian breads, and special occasion cheesecake and birthday cakes in the deli. In the meat department, Duane's Famous Sausage, with staff happy to make those special cuts. Delivery and van service available. Hammer and Wecon Grocery Store, a Petersburg family-owned business since 1921. And welcome back to What's for Dinner. Today, we're talking about rhubarb, but first, I'm your host, Mindy Anderson. I'm not a chef. I just love to cook. And I'll admit, sometimes I cook real flops. This week, or I should say yesterday, I made some coconut macaroons that I really like. They're so easy, and I used unsweetened coconut, so they weren't as sweet as a lot of recipes are. They were just perfect. And even some of them I dipped in chocolate and others I didn't. And I actually prefer the ones that aren't dipped in chocolate, if you can believe it, because they're just, they're the perfect sweetness, crunchiness. They have a little bit of a bite to them. They're perfect. So I'm going to give you my recipe for those. I also made some really good savory cheese scones this weekend. So just trying to come up with a nice house cheese scone recipe, something with some chunks of cheese in it and not shredded cheese. So I want, when you bite into the scone, some big chunks. And so I've got that recipe to give you today. Also, just easy chicken in coconut milk with some lemongrass. And I know everyone has those chicken and coconut milk and lemongrass recipes, but this one is so easy. And it just uses a whole chicken, which I absolutely love. Also, last night, I roasted up some beef. I made a beef roast and a pot roast, and it was good. Very good. Let's start with the macaroons. So what you need for this recipe is one bag of Bob's Red Mill unsweetened coconut flakes. That's what I got. So I was, I didn't even measure it out because I just opened up the bag and threw it in the bowl. So you can head to the grocery store, and if you want to get a different brand, you can. But you're going to need about what was in Bob's Red Mill bag. And like I said, the unsweetened coconut, not the sweetened coconut. And these are the smaller flakes, not the bigger pieces. Okay. And then I used half of a can of sweetened condensed milk. I wanted to use the sweetened condensed coconut milk that I thought I had in the pantry. I thought I had two cans in there. but I couldn't find it anywhere. I don't know. I must have used it for something else, or where it went, I have no idea. But I'm glad that I had the sweetened condensed milk to use instead. And I just used a half of a can, that's it. I also used a teaspoon of salt for that little bit of a bite, and a little bit of almond extract. Also, two egg whites. So if you want to make it vegan, you would use the sweetened condensed coconut milk, but then you have the egg whites, so you need to find a way to substitute those. So in a bowl, mix the coconut and the condensed milk and the salt in a medium bowl. Super easy. In another bowl, beat your egg whites until stiff peaks form. And while you're beating the egg whites into stiff peaks, that's when you can add your almond extract to that. Fold that mixture into the coconut mixture and scoop with a tablespoon. I actually used just a plain old tablespoon and then rounded it on the top with my hand and kind of pushed it down and then pulled it off the tablespoon and onto a parchment-lined cooking sheet. So mine weren't round, they were kind of an oval, and which is fine. But you can also use those really nice cookie scoops that are perfect for cookies, or you can just use your hands. And then put those onto parchment. Bake at 325 for 35 minutes or until golden brown, and they'll come out nice, just a nice golden brown color with just a nice bite to them. Really nice coconut flavor and not oversweet. And then if you want to, you can dip them in melted chocolate, you know, at the bottoms, and then put them back on parchment. You can also drizzle a little melted dark chocolate over the top. And I had such a chocolate fiasco last night at my house that a few of mine are dipped in chocolate and then the rest aren't, which is fine because I really liked them without the chocolate. But first, I have been having issues with my microwave, and I put the chocolate into what I thought was a microwave bowl. It's just a Pyrex bowl, and then the microwave started and little flame going on in there, and then the chocolate was burnt, and the whole house smelled. So once I got that cleaned up and the smell out and the chocolate scraped out of the bowl, and then I was going to cook it on the stovetop, just, you know, in a bowl over a pan of simmering water, and I had some little issues there. It was not a night for me to be using chocolate at my house. So there are a few coconut macaroons dipped in chocolate, but like I said, really, you don't need the chocolate, and they're great. They're great for the kids to take to school in their lunch, too, because there's not a whole lot of sweetness in them, and it's just a lot of coconut goodness. So that's the easy macaroon recipe. Once again, one bag of Bob's Red Mill unsweetened coconut flakes, a half a can of sweetened condensed milk, or you can use a half a can of the sweetened condensed coconut milk that you can get now, the smaller cans. And then a teaspoon of salt, which you really could leave out if you wanted. And then a couple of egg whites beat into stiff peaks. A little bit of almond extract. Mix all of that together. Make sure you beat your egg whites into stiff peaks. Bake at 325 for 35 minutes. Maybe we should move on to the scones. So I made 9 big scones, and they're too big. I mean, really, I made them, what was it, on Saturday? And as soon as I took them out of the oven, it was like, whoa, these were good. So immediately we were taste testing. And I was making them with, that's another thing I made. I made some good split pea soup this weekend. So I had some yellow split pea soup and these scones. They went great together. But if you're making this recipe, you want to make them 12, maybe even 14 scones, because then they're not so big. And here's the recipe. They go great with soup for sure. But they would be really good in the morning with a little scrambled egg, and, you know, open them up and put a little scrambled egg in there. Maybe even some bacon, make a scones bacon egg sandwich. Perfect for in the morning on the go. So you need 1 1/3 cup of unsalted cold butter or salted. 4 cups of AP flour or all-purpose flour. A couple tablespoons of sugar. However sugar you want to use. I use raw sugar. A couple tablespoons of baking powder. A couple teaspoons of salt. 1 extra large egg. Most people don't buy those, but 1 large egg will do. But if you find the largest egg you have, especially if you have chickens, and just find the largest one. 1/3 of a cup of sour cream. 2/3 cup of buttermilk, or you could use whole milk. I had buttermilk in my fridge, and that's what I decided to use with it. And I wanted them to have a little bit of a tanginess. Also, cheese. I used Parmesan and sharp cheddar. And I used about 12 ounces of cheese. And I just, I really kind of eyeballed it, actually. I had a big hunk of cheddar, and I took that out, and I cut it into nice cubes. And the cubes were just bite-sized, so they weren't super big, and they weren't really tiny, but they were just a nice little cube of cheese. And I did that with the Parmesan also. So I probably had a cup of each. So it might be more than 10 ounces. So about a cup of each of the cubes. And then some chopped fresh dill. And you know, I don't really use dill that often. I know it's horrible living here because all of the Scandinavian recipes use dill. But I somehow got away from using dill, and I'm going to try to get back. I use it with some recipes, but it has such a nice fresh taste and flavor. So anyway, it tasted great in the scones. So get some dill and chop it up. So preheat your oven to 375. Cut your cheese into the pieces. In a small bowl, you're going to mix the egg, your sour cream, and your buttermilk. Then, in a food processor, you can mix your flour, your sugar, your baking powder, and your salt. Add your cold butter cut into cubes and pulse, just like you would do, a pie dough or even biscuits. And then transfer that to a large bowl and add the wet ingredients. Mix it with a fork, and you're going to have this nice little mass that's kind of sticky. Some of it's dry. It's not quite all pulled together yet. So it's going to have some dry patches. And just throw those chunks of cheese on top and the dill and mix a little bit more, but just to combine it all. And then dump it out onto your lightly floured counter or a piece of parchment. And you can form it into a rectangle. Or you could cut it in half and form it into 2 circles. And then cut the circles into 6 scones each. Or you can form it into a rectangle, which is actually harder than forming it into a circle. But it doesn't matter if it's irregular, it's fine. Then cut the scones. If you want to cut them around, you can, but why go through the hassle? You can just cut them with a knife or a pastry cutter or something. But whatever you do, you don't want to press down too much on it, on the dough. Once you get it kind of formed into a circle, then just leave it, because you really don't want to press down. It's really not going to rise like you want them to. I maybe pressed down on my dough a little bit more than I should have, but they were delicious. Just be careful of that. And then transfer them to a lined baking pan, lined with parchment paper. Bake for 25 to 30 minutes until golden brown. Some of the cheese is going to just like ooze out of these scones, and they're going to, it's going to ease out onto the parchment, and you're going to have that nice browned, crispy cheese that has oozed out, and it's going to get crisp. So then when they come out of the oven and you take them off of the parchment, you've got these baked cheese crispy bites that are kind of hanging off the scone, and it is so good. That's the cheddar. The Parmesan, it held its own, so when you bite into the scone, you get this like nice chunk of warm Parmesan, or you get this chewy bite of sharp cheddar that has oozed out, and it's all good. And some of the cheese just kind of completely melts into the scone. You're going to love these. And then with the dill adds that sort of freshness to it. And I think you might want to add maybe just a little bit of green onion in there. Just a little bit, but I wouldn't add too much more. They're perfect the way they are. They don't need any bacon or sausage in them or anything. You can freeze the unbaked scones if you want to. Just wrap them in foil and then take them out and bake them. But it's a very easy recipe. It doesn't take long to make, and it's delicious. I don't know who would not like those. Okay. And so that's the baking that I did this weekend. As far as dinner, I mentioned I made a beef roast. And then I made some really good soup, ham and split pea soup. So easy to do if you need an idea for a good soup, because split peas cook so quickly. I mean, they don't cook, you can't make that soup in 45 minutes. You need more of an hour and a half, but it really doesn't take that long to make a good split pea soup. And then, of course, it's always better the next day. But this coconut and chicken, you're going to love. It's so nice because the coconut, the chicken is whole. You don't have to cut it into parts. So you need a whole roasting chicken, 3 to 4 pounds, a little sea salt and some freshly ground black pepper, a little bit of butter, some olive oil, and then some spices, which is what really makes this dish delicious. A cinnamon stick, a couple whole star anise, a half a cup of chopped cilantro stems, roughly chopped, really roughly chopped, a large lemon cut into eighths, and also a stalk of lemongrass. And you really just want the inner layer white part, and it only needs to be about, well, you don't need the whole stalk, but if you really want it lemongrassy, you could use the whole stalk, but take off those outer leaves. Or those outer reeds. And just use the white part only and chop it into quarter inch pieces. Also, 6 to 8 cloves of garlic peeled and smashed. Just smash it with whatever, the side of your knife. 3 cups of torn greens like kale, chard, spinach. Also, a couple green onions into quarter inch pieces and some chopped cilantro for garnish, and then it'd be good to serve this with rice. Brown rice is good, white rice is good. So pat the chicken dry, sprinkle it with a little salt and pepper, and then you're going to get ready to bake the chicken at 375. So turn your oven on to 375, and then in a Dutch oven, your heavy Dutch oven, you're going to brown the chicken and you're going to bake it in that. So melt the butter and then add the oil as well and put the chicken breast side up in the pan and let it sizzle in there and brown for a couple minutes. And then flip the bird, the whole thing, and crisp the other side as well. Then remove the pan from the heat, and you can take the chicken out, pour off the excess fat, and then you don't need that extra fat in there with the coconut milk and all that. So take the chicken off, pour out the fat, put the chicken back in the pan or the pot, and then breast side up. Then you can add your cinnamon, the star anise, the chopped cilantro stems, also the lemon, the lemongrass, the garlic, and the coconut milk. So all of it. And cook it uncovered in a preheated oven for about an hour and a half, depending on the size of your chicken. And then every now and then, every 20 minutes or so, just spoon some of that sauce over your chicken. And there you go. About an hour and a half. When the thigh starts to pull away and the leg pull away from the body, you know that the chicken is done. And this is great because you're going to baste it with that coconut, and then you will get some of the drippings from the chicken in on all of that. And it's so easy. This is such an easy recipe to make. And you can, you know, slice it into nice pieces. You can, you know, some people might like the thigh or the leg. You can go that way, or you can just slice the whole thing. It's great. And then you take the chicken off the sauce, put it onto a platter, and then start reducing the coconut milk just a little bit. And then you can add the spinach and your greens right to the broth, and it's going to wilt. And then you're going to have this creamy spinach, chard, kale, coconut goodness that you can serve over the chicken and the rice. So that's a good recipe from our house to yours today. Chicken and coconut milk with lemongrass. And coming up next, we're going to have recipes about rhubarb, because we've started harvesting rhubarb, and I'm sure some of you have too. So now is the time to start using up the rhubarb that's still in your freezer from last year, or you can pick some fresh stuff too. That's coming up here on What's for Dinner.
I want another slice of a rhubarb tart. I want another lovely slice. I'm not disparaging the blueberry pie, but rhubarb tart is oh so very nice. A rhubarb, what a rhubarb tart, what a rhubarb tart. I want another slice of rhubarb tart. The principles of modern philosophy were postulated by Descartes. Discarding everything he wasn't certain of, he said, I think, therefore I am a rhubarb tart. A rhubarb, what a rhubarb tart. René, who, René Descartes. For Marx, he thought he was a rhubarb tart. A rhubarb tart has fascinated all the poets, especially the immortal Bard. He made Richard III call out at Bosworth Field, my kingdom for a slice of rhubarb tart. Immortal what, immortal tart. Rhubarb what, a rhubarb tart. And rhymes go back, tis really pretty much. Since Wassily, Kandinsky and Paul Klee laid down the axioms of abstract art.
Welcome back to What's for Dinner. Today we're going to talk about rhubarb recipes, and lots of rhubarb. It's looking good here in town. And you could probably, if you don't have your own rhubarb, see if you can get some from somebody else. Or I've seen it in the grocery stores. You can buy it. I know Farragut Farm's bringing some here soon. So you can get rhubarb even if it's not growing at your own house. And people love to even give it away this time of the year and here soon when they're really harvesting. But I wanted to break away from a lot of the sweet rhubarb recipes. I do have some here with me, and share with you some recipes that are more savory rhubarb recipes. So we'll start off with some salsa. And, of course, if you chop the rhubarb up small enough, you just get those nice little tart pieces of rhubarb. No one wants to bite into a really big hunk of raw rhubarb, but a small piece mixed with chopped onions and cilantro and green pepper and yellow pepper, totally delicious, served on a taco or on with some fresh tortilla chips. So a couple of cups of finely diced fresh rhubarb and a half of a cup of sweet red pepper, half a cup of sweet yellow pepper, chopped. And you can really get those nice small bags of those little peppers would be perfect and use those. And then also a half a cup of fresh cilantro chopped and a few green onions chopped, a jalapeno pepper finely chopped, so all these good things together, and then of course the lime juice, a couple tablespoons of fresh lime juice. If you want to put in more, you can, and then a little bit of, you can either use honey or you could use brown sugar, a little bit of sweetener. If you want to use agave nectar, that'd be super great. So about 2 tablespoons, or to taste. So you're going to get that sweet and that sweet, tangy, and then of course some salt and some fresh ground black pepper, a little bit of red pepper flake. So blanch the rhubarb in a saucepan of boiling water for about 10 seconds. You really don't need any more than that. You don't really need any more. You don't want the rhubarb to become cooked, but 10 seconds. And then put it into a strainer, rinse it with cold water, and then that stops the blanching. Put the rhubarb and the rest of the remaining ingredients in a bowl, mix them well, and refrigerate at least an hour before serving to allow the flavors to develop, which is really hard, but you can do it. You can make it a couple days ahead of time, and it'll really develop the flavors. So give it a chance to develop the flavors if you can. You could serve it on tacos. You can serve it on salmon. It would be really good on halibut, and it would be good, really good on shrimp tacos. Moving on, so I started off with our little appetizer, and now I'm moving on to a salad. And the reason I wanted to give you the recipe for this salad is it has a rhubarb miso dressing. But this is basically a green salad with some salmon and a rhubarb miso dressing. And for the salad, kind of a nice crunchy mix of like maybe some cooked lentils, or you could even use couscous or any sort of grain really, or a small legume like a lentil would go really well with this dish. A couple avocados thinly sliced, and also a salmon fillet without the skin. So it doesn't have to, it's going to be enough to serve 3 or 4. And it is a salad, but it's kind of a salad that's just hearty. And without the skin would be good. Also, 1 bunch of asparagus, 1 cup of edamame, a couple handfuls of greens or lettuce, about 3 handfuls. Also, 3 poached eggs. That's a little, labor intensive, this salad, but oh my gosh, delicious. some lemon pepper, salt, olive oil, and also for the dressing, here's your miso rhubarb dressing. A couple of rhubarb stalks sliced and then boiled for 5 minutes. A half a cup of apple cider vinegar. A half a cup of extra virgin olive oil. 4 tablespoons of agave syrup or honey. And then a couple teaspoons of miso paste. You can use the red miso or you could use the white miso, whichever you prefer. And then a little salt. So to make this dish, you first cook your lentils or whatever grain or legume you're going to use, and then drain those and set it aside. Make your dressing. You've boiled the sliced rhubarb for 5 minutes, drain it, and then blend it with the rest of the ingredients in the blender, except for the salt. So salt it later, because the miso paste, you might not need salt. Cook the edamame, and I get them already shelled, and I just boil them. But you could also put them in the microwave unless your microwave's starting to explode. But I just like boil them for a couple minutes in the water and then run them through some cold water. But you can also, like I said, you can take the whole edamame in the pod and you can microwave them for a couple minutes and then you can pop them right out of the shell. And then the asparagus, it's however you like to cook the asparagus. Snap off the woody ends. I like to run the vegetable peeler over mine and get off the outsides. And then just a little bit of olive oil in a pan works great. Add the asparagus, some salt, lemon pepper, and just saute it for a couple of minutes. And then set those aside. And for the salmon, you can slice it into pieces. So if you're having maybe 3 people over, 9 pieces. If you're having 4 people over, you slice it into 12 pieces. Season it with a little lemon pepper and some salt. And put that in your pan with some olive oil and pan fry it for a couple minutes per side. And set that aside. And then make your poached eggs. So you have your boiling water, add a little bit of salt and a little bit of white vinegar. Bring it to a boil. And I'm cautious when it comes to poached eggs, but I'd like to get much better at making a ton of them at once. But I usually crack an egg into a cup or a glass, and then I carefully drop the egg into the middle of the pan from there, and I let it poach for 3 minutes. Remove it with a slotted spoon and set that aside. And if you set them on a paper towel, that's great because it just soaks up a lot of that liquid. And then so you're going to arrange some of the avocado, some of the lettuce, and some of the edamame on each plate. Add some of the asparagus and sprinkle on some of your grains or legumes, and then a few pieces of salmon on each plate. So arrange those in the middle and place a poached egg on top. Finish with a little bit of maybe microgreens or something. It's kind of a special lunch, isn't it? It'd be perfect for a spring lunch or a shower of some sort. And you can serve the dressing on the side. That way you're not tossing, and it looks nice on the plate and the dressing on the side. People can put on what they want with the dressing. But the rhubarb with the vinegar and the oil and the agave syrup and the miso paste, oh, how delicious is that, right? So now we're going to move on to the soup. And actually, this soup would go really well with this salad. And this is a carrot rhubarb soup. This is from this really cool website called A Brown Table. You'll have to look it up. Everybody advertises on The Brown Table, too, because it's such a great site. So many people go to it. The food photography is amazing. And this is a recipe from there. And you need 2.5 pounds of carrots peeled and chopped, 1 cup of rhubarb stock diced, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 4 cloves, 4 black peppercorns, 1 teaspoon of kosher sea salt, 1 teaspoon of turmeric powder, some low-sodium vegetable stock, like 1 quart, 1 teaspoon of whatever kind of hot sauce you like sriracha, and some garnish, some sort of garnish if you want, which is optional. And so put your wire rack in the center of your oven and preheat to 350. Toss the carrots, the rhubarb, the olive oil, the black peppercorns, and cloves together in a large mixing bowl and spread them out on a baking sheet and cover it with parchment first so then you don't have so much of a mess to clean up. Bake for 30 minutes and then remove it from the oven and transfer all of that to a large stock pot. Then add your turmeric and the stock to the vegetables and bring it all to a boil on a medium-high flame. Then remove it from the stove, and you can use your immersion blender for this. Blend all the ingredients together until completely smooth. Or you can use your countertop blender, but make sure your liquid has cooled down slightly before you put it in the blender so it doesn't explode. Return the stock pot to the stove and cook for another 15 to 20 minutes. This is with your blended vegetables. 15 to 20 minutes on a medium-low flame. Stir in your hot sauce, sriracha, or whatever you're using, and stir it occasionally during cooking, and serve with some fresh something. Maybe a little bit of chopped up basil would be good. And that's a carrot rhubarb soup. It's going to have that nice bite to the carrots, and the carrots are going to be sweet and earthy, and then the bite to the with the rhubarb, ooh, it's going to be really, really good. So you can put rhubarb in quite a few things. I'm just trying to give you some ideas of what you can do besides rhubarb pie, muffins, cakes, tarts. Of course, you can make rhubarb jam, great rhubarb pie. Here's a recipe for some slow-cooked rhubarb ribs, and this sauce is not hard to make. It's all about the sauce here, and there's rhubarb in the sauce. You could use this sauce for ribs. You can also use it to make a grilled rhubarb chicken, and it would be fantastic. You might like to put your ribs in, cover them, and put them in boiling water and cook them for a while. I like to just cover mine with foil in a baking dish and cook my ribs ahead of time that way. But if you're going to bring them to a boil, you start by bringing the water to a boil and cooking the ribs for just the few minutes in your boiling water, and then drain the ribs, and then change the water and add new water, and then you can add some spice to that water, like coriander, bay leaves, garlic, and salt, and cook that over medium heat for about an hour until the ribs are tender. Then drain the ribs, discard the liquid and the herbs, and then you're ready for the grill after that. Or you can just, I just cook the ribs in a, I put spice on my ribs and put foil over the top of them, put them in the oven and bake them until they're tender. And I drain off all of the fat from the ribs that I've collected. My dad used to, white bread, He used to take white bread. He would bake pork chops that way. And then he would take white bread and he would dip the white bread in that pork chop grease. He's from Southern Illinois. He loves that. Okay. So for the rhubarb barbecue sauce, you need a couple tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil and one small onion, finely diced. A clove of garlic, finely chopped, and 2 tablespoons of tomato paste. 8 ounces of finely chopped rhubarb. And a tablespoon of brown or raw sugar. A tablespoon of apple cider vinegar. A tablespoon of molasses. Also some Worcestershire sauce. A tablespoon of Dijon mustard. Fine sea salt. If you have it, 1 chili from a can of adobo. It's always that thing, you know, it's you always only need 1 chili out of the whole can. But hopefully you remembered to take the remainder and put it into you know, you can put it into your ice cube tray, freeze it, and then stick it in the freezer in a little Ziploc bag that says adobo. So if you have one of those from previous, perfect. Use it. A pinch of ground clove and some freshly ground black pepper. So to make this, you heat the olive oil in your sauté pan. Add your onions and cook about 7 minutes until they're translucent. Then add your garlic and sauté a couple minutes more. Be careful with that, though, because if it's too hot, that garlic's going to start to brown and get... You don't want to burn garlic, so be careful with that. Then add the tomato paste and stir to coat the onion mixture. Add the remaining ingredients and cover. Simmer on low heat for about 8 minutes until the rhubarb is tender. And then here you're going to transfer it to a blender or food processor and make sure the sauce is nice and smooth. Drizzle in just a little bit of water to thin it out. And if the sauce is too thick, you can just add a little more water, a little bit at a time. So you're going to coat those cooked ribs with the barbecue sauce and put the ribs on the grill. And just make sure that you don't get them too close to the charcoal or whatever. You don't want the sauce to scorch. And turn the ribs here and there, brushing it with more barbecue sauce, and until the ribs are hot and smoky. And you could do that also with pre-baked chicken. And you have some nice chicken barbecued rhubarb chicken. But I have a couple more recipes because I'm running out of time. I also wanted to let you know that you can make lots of great sandwiches with rhubarb spreads like mustardy rhubarb jam. You can make a prosciutto panini rhubarb relish sandwich. Also, yeah, so those are a couple good. So you can make a nice grilled ham and cheese with a little bit of mustard rhubarb jam. So you take some rhubarb, like a stalk of rhubarb. It's about 2.5 cups, some water and some sugar, and bring it to a boil in a saucepan. Simmer it for about 30 minutes until it's cooked. And then remove it from the heat and stir in the mustard. So there you have it. So you can mix a couple cheeses together, spread some butter on a piece of bread, and top with some jam, a couple slices of ham on the bread, and divide the cheese up and heat it all up in a nonstick skillet. So you've buttered your bread and you flip and you butter the other side, and nice and golden brown and delicious grilled ham and cheese with a mustardy rhubarb jam. You can use the mustardy rhubarb jam for also it would be really good on a sausage too, on a bun or on a like turkey burger. That would be good. Prosciutto panini with rhubarb relish. So you can make a little bit of rhubarb relish, which is just some relish chopped rhubarb chopped up with some green onion and some other onion heated up in a heavy stock pot. Make a little relish out of that. And that would be super good on prosciutto. Yum. With some Gruyere cheese, Fontina cheese, on maybe a ciabatta roll. Are you sick of rhubarb yet? Okay. And one more. This is just a rhubarb recipe that you can use for a lot of different things, in particular drinks. To make a vanilla rhubarb simple syrup to use, and it makes a great gift. So 8 ounces of chopped rhubarb, a cup of sugar, some honey, like a couple tablespoons, also a couple cups of water, some cinnamon, nutmeg, and a scrape out a vanilla bean. Add all the ingredients to a saucepan and stir and let the mixture come to a boil. And then let it simmer. Remove it from the heat and let it cool for about 10 minutes. And then strain it into a clean glass jar, and you can store it in the refrigerator covered. And you can use it to make some really good rhubarb mojitos or add it to sparkling cider. Lots that you can do with vanilla rhubarb simple syrup. And that's it. That's all I have time for these rhubarb recipes today. So if you don't have rhubarb, you can borrow some from a friend. It's really coming up, and it's thick this year. Also, you can buy it at the grocery store, and I think Farragut Farm's bringing rhubarb with them this time around as well. Coming up next, it's the drink of the week on What's for Dinner. Support for What's for Dinner on KFSK comes from Keto's Cave and Liquor Store, with a large selection of beers, wines, brandies, and rums to cook with, accompany any meal or potluck, or for mixing in a new favorite drink. On Singley Alley and open 7 days a week. And in case you're wondering, today we're listening to the Auburn University Marching Band. Okay, today I have two drinks. They're very easy. The first is a fizzy rhubarb shrub. I had to stick with the rhubarb theme. 1 pound of rhubarb sliced into quarter-inch semicircles. 2 cups of light agave nectar. 1/2 cup of good quality apple cider vinegar. Sparkling water. And for serving, maybe some sprigs of fresh thyme, kumquat slices, or an orange twist. And cook all of that up together. Let it cool and strain. Or basically your rhubarb, your agave nectar, and your apple cider. And strain and let it cool. Serve it with some sparkling water and add your thyme, your kumquat slices, orange twist. Serve it over ice. Delicious. The next one is an iced rhubarb tea, kind of similar. You need maybe 8 stalks of rhubarb or 8 cups of rhubarb cut into 3-inch lengths, 8 cups of water, 1/3 cup of sugar, 1 sprig of mint. Add the rhubarb to the water, bring it to a boil, reduce the heat, simmer for an hour, strain, and then add the sugar. Serve iced with mint garnish. And that's an iced rhubarb tea, and it keeps in the fridge for a while. So people who like tea and really like rhubarb. Today, before we go, I just wanted to tell you about, I don't make a lot of cakes, but when I find a cake I really like, then I make it again, like the North Douglas chocolate cake. And every now and then, I love to make a cake for a special occasion. This is one of those cakes, I think. And this came from, well, this was adapted from Nothing But Delicious. And this cake sounds so decadent. And if you're getting married in the springtime, it would be a really great cake for a wedding, I think, or a spring shower or a spring birthday. This is a buttermilk cake with rhubarb frosting, rhubarb buttercream frosting, and a cardamom cream cake. And it's such a, oh, I can imagine what the rhubarb buttercream must taste like on the outside of the cake. And on the inside, the cardamom cream layered between the buttermilk cake and the cardamom cream. And this recipe has, it's more of a cream cheese sort of cardamom cream than a cooked, like, than a cooked cardamom cream. So I'm just going to quickly give you this recipe that you can savor over. So for the cake, 3 cups of all-purpose flour, a tablespoon of baking powder, and 1 teaspoon of salt, 2 sticks of unsalted butter at room temperature, and 2 cups of sugar, 4 large eggs at room temp, a couple teaspoons of vanilla extract, 1/2 cup of buttermilk, and 1/2 cup of sour cream. That goes into the cake. And you're going to butter 3 8-inch round cake pans. Line the bottoms of them with parchment paper. And then butter and flour the pans. Then in a small bowl, whisk together your flour, baking powder, and salt. Set it aside. Then mix together the buttermilk and sour cream. And set that aside. In a bowl, in a standing mixer, whip the butter with your whisk attachment until light and fluffy. Then add your sugar. Keep beating it until it's light and fluffy and all the sugar has dissolved. Then add your eggs 1 at a time, scrape down the sides of the bowl, then add your vanilla. Keep whisking for 4 to 5 minutes. Then you're going to fold in the flour and buttermilk and sour cream mixture in 3 additions, beginning and ending with the flour. Divide the batter up between the 3 cake pans and bake 25 to 30 minutes until set. And there you have your 3 buttermilk sour cream cakes. For the rhubarb buttercream, I think this is the most important. I'm thinking that it's going to be a nice, really light pink color, but if you have to add maybe 1 or 2 drops of light pink food coloring or food gel, you can, but I wouldn't go overboard. You'd really want this to be super light pink. So here's the recipe for that. 2 cups of rhubarb chopped into 1-inch pieces, 1 cup of water, 4 egg whites at room temperature, 1 1/4 cup of sugar, 3/4 pound or 3 sticks of unsalted butter, and 1 teaspoon of vanilla. So put the rhubarb and water in a medium saucepan, bring it to boil, and let it simmer for 15 to 18 minutes until the rhubarb is tender and most of the water has evaporated. Then put the rhubarb in a food processor and process until it's a smooth puree. Set the puree aside, and you can add a little bit of food coloring there if you don't think it's going to be pink enough. Place egg whites, sugar, and a pinch of salt in a mixer bowl. Put it over a pot of simmering water. Whisk until the sugar dissolves and remove it from the bowl, from the heat, and then using a whisk, whisk the mixture on medium speed for 5 minutes. Then increase the mixer speed to medium and whisk until it's nice and stiff and glossy peaks form, about 6 minutes. Reduce the speed to medium. Add your butter one piece at a time, whisking well after each addition. When the butter's been completely incorporated, switch to your paddle. Run it on low, add the vanilla, and then the cooled rhubarb puree. Beat until smooth, 3 to 5 minutes. Use immediately or cover and refrigerate. And you do want to make sure that your puree is cool, because if it isn't, it's going to melt your butter and it's not going to turn out right. So it's going to be really, really lovely. So basically, that's going to be the outside of your cake. And then on the inside of your cake, for layering, you're going to make this really delicious cardamom cream with 8 ounces of cream cheese, 4 tablespoons of unsalted butter at room temperature, 1/2 cup of sugar, and 1 teaspoon of vanilla. Also, 1 teaspoon of cardamom. So beat the cream cheese and the butter on medium-high speed until light and fluffy. Add the sugar and beat until smooth, about 3 to 4 minutes. Add your vanilla and your cardamom and mix until combined. And just to assemble it, you layer one cake on a serving plate, put 1/2 the cardamom cream on top the layer, spread it evenly over the cake, top with the other cake, add the rest of the cardamom cream and spread it over the second layer, then top with the third and final layer, frost the cake with the rhubarb butter cream. So you can check this recipe out. It was adapted from Nothing But Delicious. And that's it for What's for Dinner today. Lots of rhubarb recipes. I'm sure we'll be seeing rhubarb at all the potlucks and lots of good rhubarb stuff. Thanks for joining me today. Happy cooking and happy eating. We'll be back next week with more recipes. I think it's time to once again talk about beets. That's coming up.